Hello, this is Michael Edward Miller, host of Around and About. Coming up on the show, we've got a conversation with world-renowned author and scientist Dr. Michio Kaku. It's a very special episode, an extended conversation. Stay tuned. Around and About starts right now. Welcome to Around and About Chattanooga. On today's show, we're talking about the future, the human mind, and technology. Computers get more and more powerful all the time. Every year, faster processors come out, better graphics, more memory. Technology is improving very quickly. But one thing that doesn't change very quickly is how we actually interact with laptops and desktops. We type on a keyboard or we move a mouse around. That's pretty old technology. Those have been around for decades. When is the next revolution going to come, a way for us to really truly interact with computers on a deeper level? It might be soon.
For example, even the mouse may become obsolete in the next decade as we begin to talk to our computers mentally.
Seriously, you might plug your brain straight into your laptop. Dr. Michio Kaku says that kind of thing really is possible.
Using telepathy, we'll be able to communicate, and we can already do this in the laboratory. This is not science fiction. It's already been done in the lab.
Dr. Michio Kaku is a theoretical physicist. He co-founded string theory, which is a theory that could explain the fundamental nature of the universe. He teaches at City College in New York. He's also a celebrity, a popular science author. He's written 8 books about science, technology, and the future. Many of his books are New York Times bestsellers. He's hosted TV specials and shows for the Discovery Channel, the History Channel, and the Science Channel.
Tonight, I present to you, for your consideration, the Planet Buster, the Death Star.
I spoke with him recently. He says computers will soon be ubiquitous. And you've heard of Google Glass. How about that on contact lenses?
So when you blink, you'll be online. And the first people to buy internet contact lenses will be college students studying for final examinations. They will blink and see all the answers in their contact lens.
Well, you're a professor. How would you keep your students from cheating if they were doing that?
Well, yeah, we may have to confiscate their contact lens before they take the final exam. Or we'll have to change the way we teach.
Dr. Kaku's latest book comes out in February. He's going to travel to Chattanooga and give us a sneak peek. He'll be at Chattanooga State on January 23rd, and he'll give a presentation. His book is The Future of the Mind, The Scientific Quest to Understand, Enhance, and Empower the Mind. His book says that science fiction concepts like mind control, telekinesis, and telepathy are possible right now. Here's our conversation. Dr. Kaku, welcome to Around and About Chattanooga.
Well, glad to be on.
In your book, The Future of the Mind, you say telepathy is possible. That really surprised me. You're a scientist, so when you say something like telepathy is possible, I don't think you mean psychic supernatural telepathy. What are you talking about?
We're talking about what is called synthetic telepathy, not the telepathy you see in science fiction movies. But by putting probes on the mind, we can then begin to process that information, which is radio, and begin to convert mental commands into electric commands. So you can actually, with an implant in your brain, control a laptop computer. People who are paralyzed, who are literally vegetables, can now have their brain cooked up to a computer so they can surf the web, do crossword puzzles, write email, answer emails, talk to their loved ones, even though they're trapped inside basically a lifeless body, and manipulate household appliances. My colleague Stephen Hawking, who is totally paralyzed, the great cosmologist, now has a chip in his eyeglass, which allows him to type by thinking. And so by thinking, your brain emits radio. Radio can be picked up by electrodes, deciphered by computers, and then converted into type. And that's why in the future, we'll be able to, when we walk into a room, mentally control the computers around us. So we will basically have telekinetic powers, just like in the movie Carrie.
You also say in the book that mind reading is possible. How does that work? How can technology make mind reading happen?
Well, you know, scientists have always wanted to photograph a dream. And we can actually do it now. This is amazing. This is something that even I thought would be impossible. But at the University of California at Berkeley, where I got my PhD years ago, they've actually taken an MRI scan of the living brain, converted the energy output into 30,000 dots, three-dimensional dots, so the brain looks like a Christmas tree that's all lit up. Then a computer begins to process that and extract images. So that if you're looking at, for example, a cow or a bird, you can actually see rather crude images. They're not perfect, of course, but you can actually see the outlines of a bird or a cow or what you are looking at. And one of the postdocs there actually put himself in the MRI scan when he was dreaming, and the computer tried to create a rather crude simulation of what he was dreaming about. And so in the future, you may be able to wake up in the morning and actually hit the PC and see what you dreamt about last night.
The implications for filmmakers would be staggering. You wouldn't need to film anymore. You could just sit there and mentally envision your movie and have it record to a hard drive.
Right. I mean, think about movies. They haven't changed in like 50 years since sound was introduced. And so it's basically a static two-dimensional screen with moving images, moving pixels. In the future, we may be able to actually upload memories and emotions. Now, with animals, this has already been done. Last year, for the first time in world history, an actual memory was recorded from a mouse. A mouse learned to tap a certain key and get a sip of water. And that memory was recorded by a computer and then reinserted back into the mouse. And so the mouse clearly remembered which lever to pull in order to get the water. And so this is a first. Remember, we're not at the level of the Matrix where you can become a karate master by simply thinking and hitting the play button of a computer. We're not there yet. But the very fact that we can actually play back the memory for a mouse is staggering. The first time in world history that this has been done. It was done last year in Los Angeles.
I think the downside to that would be, you know, we just had the big NSA revelations last year. People are very afraid of that. So it seems like the potential for abuse of this, if people did have some kind of interface built into them that would allow anyone to access their memories. I mean, can you imagine the spying potential?
Yeah, let's be blunt about this. Back in the 1960s and 70s, the CIA spent literally millions of dollars interviewing psychics, so-called telepaths, magicians, a whole array of charlatans and quacks in order to locate the position of Soviet submarines and Soviet satellites. And basically, the CIA wasted millions of dollars of taxpayers' money on a futile effort to read people's minds. Now, however, we have to be careful that reading minds is not like in a science fiction movie where you can basically read people's thoughts from a distance. You have to put a helmet on people. You have to have electrodes. So in other words, in the future, if you don't want to be mind read, you'll have ways in which to prevent your mind from being read by the CIA or others. It's very difficult to read people's minds. You still have to have MRI scans, electrodes placed very close to the brain. And so don't think that anyone's going to be able to read your thoughts without your permission anytime soon.
So we don't need to all buy tinfoil hats.
That's right. We're not going to have to look like some refugee from Star Trek having all sorts of things placed around our brain. Radio signals damp very, very rapidly when you leave the human brain. And so it's extremely difficult to read the mind from a distance, any more than just a few feet, and the radio becomes gibberish, basically.
I'm talking to Dr. Michio Kaku. You've been on TV many, many, many times. You've had a Science Channel show based on your book, Physics of the Impossible. You've been on The Colbert Report. But despite all these TV appearances, one show that I don't think you've ever been on,
our whole universe was in a hot, dense state that nearly...
The Big Bang Theory. And they love having scientists as guest stars. Do you think you would ever do The Big Bang Theory?
Well, I'll be blunt. None of my friends, and my friends are all theoretical physicists, none of my friends resemble anybody in the Big Bang Theory. I don't recognize anybody from that program. However, it's great laughs. I mean, every time I watch their program, I get a chuckle. But I also realize that it does promote a certain stereotype of scientists, that either we're mad scientists like Dr. Frankenstein, or we're nerds that are clueless about how to pick up a woman. And however, you know, these stereotypes are enduring, but I just hope they don't affect the next generation of physicists, discourage them to become become physicists because they'll never get a date in the future after watching The Big Bang Theory.
Well, one thing I do like about the show is they seem like they're trying to use real science in the scripts sometimes. Like they've got a science consultant who adds in real scientific terms and theories and equations.
You know, I gotta ask, why didn't you just get a license at 16 like everybody else?
I was otherwise engaged.
Doing what?
Examining perturbative amplitudes in N equals 4 supersymmetric theories, leading to a re-examination of the ultraviolet properties of multi-loop N equals 8 supergravity using modern twist-door theory.
It seems like they're actually fact-checking some of the science in there, trying to make it realistic.
Right, and I also saw a focus group analysis of why the show is so funny. I mean, originally people just laughed and chuckled over all their antics, right? But eventually people began to feel sorry for them. And eventually they begin to sort of identify with them. And so I think there's been sort of like an evolution in the way people relate to the program.
Interesting.
That it's just not laughing at a bunch of clueless nerds, right? People actually build a relationship with them and begin to realize that they're human, they have human problems. And yes, they are focused on science, but the bottom line is they have problems that all of us have problems. I mean, you know, not everyone has a date on Friday night.
That's Dr. Michio Kaku. More coming up in a minute.
Funding comes from Siskin Children's Institute, whose Center for Developmental Pediatrics provides specialized pediatric health care services for children with special needs up to 21 years of age through medical therapy and psychological services. Appointments by primary care physician referral, siskin.org/pediatrics.
Funding comes from Tennessee Reproductive Medicine, specialists in IVF and infertility treatments, dedicated to building families, online at trmbaby.com.
My guest today is Dr. Michio Kaku. He's a theoretical physicist who writes New York Times bestsellers about science and the future. He's coming to Chattanooga State on January 23rd at 6:30 p.m. He'll give a presentation titled The Future of the Mind and Beyond. That's the subject of his latest book. I spoke with him on the phone in advance of his upcoming visit. We talked about technology and the human brain. Scientists are trying to map out the entire brain the same way they've already mapped out the human genome. It's a vast scientific project that President Obama supports.
President Barack Obama, in a State of the Union last year, announced a multi-million dollar initiative to basically sequence all the pathways of the human brain. Remember the Human Genome Project of the last decade? That revolutionized medicine. That was a $3 billion crash program. Now we're talking about another crash program to take on Alzheimer's, mental illness, schizophrenia, Asperger's, different kinds of afflictions of the mind. And we're now going to be spending up to $1 billion. That's what the Europeans have allocated for their project. And we may be able to tackle mental illness. Think about it. A good fraction of the human population, 5 to 10%, suffer from things like depression all the way out to Alzheimer's and schizophrenia. But we're clueless. We're clueless as to why people have things like bipolar syndrome and schizophrenia. However, with this billion-dollar initiative, we hope to basically sequence all the pathways of the brain and maybe even begin to understand what consciousness is and what mental illness is. This could revolutionize one of the greatest sources of suffering of the human species, which is mental illness.
So it could be almost like working on a computer where you say, well, this person just kind of has some bad RAM in their brain. We just need to replace the RAM or something like that.
Yeah, bad wiring. We don't think that mental illness is caused by different parts of the brain being blown out, like a fuse or a flat tire. We think that it's a misconnection, that the connections are wired, but the brain is perfectly functional. Think of a computer where the wiring is bad. Even though every single transistor works, the wiring is hooked up incorrectly. And we think that could be, for example, bipolar syndrome or schizophrenia. We're not sure. but no one knows the wiring of the brain. That's why this new initiative could be a game changer. Basically, creating a backup copy of the brain with every single neuron listed, which means that science fiction writers like to speculate that the end point of this is to create Brain 2.0, that is a backup copy of your brain. Now, this we cannot do, of course, for many, many decades. But think about it. If you had a backup copy of your brain, you can, in some sense, become immortal. That is, your personality would live on even after you're dead. It boggles the imagination.
Yeah, I mean, you could just upload your consciousness to the internet or something.
That's right. In fact, I was staggered by the latest Superman movie, where everyone knows that Superman's father died when Krypton blew up.
Yeah.
But his consciousness was recorded by computers, and the computer can recreate a holographic image of Superman's father. And so Superman has a very intelligent conversation with his dead father in the latest Superman movie. And there's even a new movie coming out called Transcendence, which basically puts this into the near future when we have computers that are powerful enough to create Brain 2.0. So even though your body has died, a computer program has basically created a Xerox copy of every single neuron. And so your consciousness lives on even after you are dead. So there's even a Hollywood movie based around that. So in my book, I interview the top scientists who say that, well, we cannot do that today, and we won't be able to do that for many decades. But in principle, it might be possible.
You've written 8 books on various topics, many of them about the future and what the future of science will hold. I would say for me personally in my life, I would think the internet is probably the biggest game changer while I've been alive. What do you think is going to be the next big game changer?
Well, just realize that if you take a look at human society 100,000 years ago, right, our basic personality hasn't changed in 100,000 years, even with all these fantastic devices like the internet. After the hunt, what did we do? We sat at the campfire and chuckled and laughed and flirted with each other and chased each other and got drunk. Well, that's Facebook. Facebook is the campfire in cyberspace. It's the campfire multiplied by 7 billion people. And so we haven't changed at all for 100,000 years. So I talk to inventors who say, what's the next big thing? What's the next big thing? Realize that take human society of 100,000 years ago when we were cavemen and cavewomen engaged in the hunt and then at the campfire after the hunt and multiply that by billions of times and then you get an understanding of what society will be like because people haven't changed. That's why we don't have the paperless office. Many people thought that paper would become obsolete. The opposite happened. We have more paper than before. And why is that? Because we are hunters. And we like to have proof of the kill. It's no big deal to brag about the buffalo that got away. People laugh at you because it got away. You want tangible proof. And that's why we don't trust electrons. We want paper. And that's why the paperless office never materialized. Or the peopleless city that will all teleconference, will never have to commute, will simply talk to our boss via a TV screen. That never happened because we're social animals. We hunt socially. We laugh socially. We like to size each other up. We like to bond with people. These things haven't changed for 100,000 years. And so why was the internet so popular? Because it reinforced human contact. That's the bottom line. People can now talk to other people, exchange information, and exchange greetings and stuff on an unparalleled scale. And that's basically who we were 100,000 years ago, multiplied by all this technological firepower.
Well, yeah, that's true, because I think something that science fiction kind of failed to predict was that the thing that would make the internet portable for everyone, it was the phone. People wanted a phone, which is inherently a social object, and that evolved into smartphones, which evolved into the portable internet.
That's right. So if you take a look at all the gadgets of today, some gadgets were not accepted by people like the picture phone of 1964. AT&T created the picture phone, and it was a huge financial flop. And that's because, you know, we are hunters. We like to see other people for hours at a time on television, but we don't like to be stared at by other people. Let's do an experiment. Get in an elevator and stare at somebody for 7 seconds. I guarantee you're going to get a black eye for about 7 seconds just by staring at somebody. And yet you can spend 7 hours watching television just at a snap. Because we're hunters. We like to hunt. We don't like to be hunted. And that's one reason why Skype, for example, will only go to a certain point. And that's why the picture phone was a complete failure back in the 1960s.
Yeah, and even today when you can just FaceTime with someone and actually have a face-to-face conversation with them, so many people would rather just send a text message.
That's right. In other words, we like to see the person we're talking to, but we don't like to be seen by the person we're talking to because we are descended from hunters. And that hasn't changed. Our basic personality has not changed in 100,000 years.
You host two different nationally syndicated radio shows. What are the shows? How can the listeners find them?
Well, go to my website, mkaku.org, mkaku.org, and you can see a listing of all the 130 stations that carry Science Fantastic. And also, I have another program, Exploration, on public television. Or go to my Facebook site. We have about almost 900,000 fans on the Facebook site. And also, I'm on Twitter, Michio Kaku on Twitter, and you can find out what I'm doing and what TV appearances I'm going to be on by going to my Twitter.
Dr. Kaku, thank you so much for joining us here on Around and About. You'll be here January 23rd. I would advise anyone who wants to go to get there early because I think it's going to be standing room only.
Well, let's hope so. And it's been great to be on your show.
That's it for Rounded About Chattanooga. Thank you all for listening. Dr. Michio Kaku will be here in Chattanooga on Thursday, January 23rd for a presentation called The Future of the Mind and Beyond. The event is free and open to the public. There's going to be a book signing from 4:30 to 5:30 p.m. at the Chattanooga State Library, and then the presentation starts at 6:30 p.m. More information is at wutc.org. And as always, if you have questions, comments, or story ideas, you can contact me, Mike-Miller, at utc.edu.
Around and About Chattanooga is a production of WUTC with contributions by the staff and volunteers of WUTC. Find us online at wutc.org.